this is how much I'm sure that my look tells people that I'm not French, because when I go into shops in Paris, people speak to me in English before I've even spoken.
Oh.
So if I walk into a clothing shop in Paris and I'm looking at the rails, I've not said a word, and the salesperson who is French comes up to me and will say, "Do you need any help?" Can I? That's it. Can I help you? That's what they'll say. And then I'll reply, "Ben non, non, ça va, je regarde juste." And then they go, "Ah oui, okay."
Hello, welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers, or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested.
Hi guys, have fun.
All right.
Goji goji.
All right, no one's going to give us a fake 1, 2, 3. I'm just going to do that myself.
Okay, do you want me to do it? Because
please,
you're setting
yes,
up.
Yes.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Bonjour à tous. Bienvenue sur ce podcast de comédie avec un accent. Aujourd'hui, j'ai l'immense plaisir de recevoir mon invité, la comédienne, humoriste, star de social, réseaux sociaux. Welcome back to Comedy with Accent Pox. I'm going to switch back to English, coming on another episode of my, oh my God, this guest has been waiting forever. The star, the comedian, actor, Tati McLeod. Yay!
I am well impressed. I did not know you were bilingual.
I'm not bilingual.
There
to
is
the extent
some serious
of you.
French in there. There is some serious French. Normally, whenever someone wants to do a bit of like funny French, it'll be like bonjour, and then we go straight into English. But there was a couple
Thank
of phrases.
You mean it's like Paul Chaudhry does Femi, and then you corrected his pronunciation?
It was okay. Paul asked for it, and that's a different podcast for a different time. You don't need to listen to that one.
Exactly. It's a really good episode, but let me explain, because you are a true bilingual guest, and I thought the proper way to honor you is to use both language to introduce you. And when I say bilingual, you are one of the few, how to say that, bilingual person where your both languages match.
Yes.
Though almost parity.
Yes, I think that's true, though I would definitely say that having now lived in the UK for, because I've lived half my life in exactly both countries,
yes,
but I've been in the UK since I was 18 and I've just moved back to France. And I would say that now I've got to the point where my English has a bit of an edge over my French.
Yes, but I feel these languages is a lifetime struggle and teasing each other just like England and France.
Yeah.
So it's ebb and flow. And now you move back to Paris in a few years' time. We will
it's
see.
Very no, but it's no, but and I actually think that when it comes to languages, and it's something that I talk a bit about in my show and stuff, and like on a more serious note, that there isn't like when we think about languages, often sometimes I think we think about it quite academically.
Yes,
like there is an academic perfection of what a language is, and actually a language is like a human organism. It changes, it adapts, it's reflective of where you've lived and how long you lived there. And now it's like my French has tinges of English in it, and my English sometimes picks up some bits of French.
Ooh.
And so it becomes, your language reflects who you are, where you've lived, what you've been interested in. You'll meet people who speak French with a Quebecois accent. This woman the other day I met after my show, she's Romanian, but she lived in Quebec. Her husband's Quebecois. Now she lives in the UK. Her accent, her voice, the words she uses, it's a combination.
Does she say l'accent en politique?
Voilà, avec les mecs, et un petit accent Quebecois. So that's how I think about it now. I'm less like, oh my God, you need to have your perfect French and your perfect English, otherwise you're a failure. I try to be like, okay, but like sometimes there's words I'm going to drop in French and drop in English, and that's also just who I am now, and that's
but
fine.
But Tati, are you convinced now when I say to you, when I greeted you upstairs just now, I'm fascinated by you. I'm not just flattering, and there's a reason for that. This is a weird podcast. Sometimes it goes more comedy, sometimes it goes more linguistic. Today, I'm going to have both big time.
I don't know. I think I really can lean in. This is my French side. I can so lean into the serious conversations.
Yes.
If people sit me down, they're just like, so, Hegel. What do you think of Nietzsche? I'm just like, okay, we're going to go there. Great. Yes.
Okay, let's cut into it.
Bring out the coffee.
You already touched upon the raison d'être of this podcast without me even asking the question. This is my standard question for every single guest. Mm. Tati, do you have an accent?
Do I have an accent? When I speak French now, mm-hmm. I have a little bit of an English accent.
Yes.
But I don't have a French accent when I speak English. Well, I think it's interesting about this English accent that I have in French now. It's taken me a long time to accept it. Because when I was growing up in France, I took so much pride in the fact that I didn't have an English accent when I spoke French. I felt like that was how I could prove. I felt like that was my, the way in which I...
Your defense?
Like the way in which I got to appropriate Frenchness. That was my evidence because I didn't have a French passport. I felt like that was my like proof of how French I was. That when I spoke French, you did not know that I was English. Mm-hmm. That was me kind of like holding my nationality, being like, look how French I am. You can't hear my English. And then when I started to develop an English accent, the longer I lived in the UK, it was like I was losing that sense of ownership over the French side of me. Because if I speak French with an English accent, like what makes me French? I don't have a French passport. I wasn't born there. I don't have French parents.
So that remark would have shattered you to the core. When I was younger,
it was like a point of pride and joy that I didn't have an English accent when I spoke French.
Yes.
And if someone picked up on the fact that I was English or said, ah, there's an accent there, that would have been really upsetting for me and I would have been really irritated with myself. I would have thought back to the interaction, asked myself, what word did I mispronounce? What did I say wrong? And it was like that for a very, very, very long time. It's only in the last 2 or 3 years since I've been making content on social media around this topic of being bicultural that I've begun to accept more. It's not because you have an accent that it means you don't belong there or that you're not allowed to appropriate that culture or that it's not something that is also allowed to be your home. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think for a long time, that's how I felt.
Would you mind if I do a quick summary of your life story, just in case?
Yes.
I think very, very few people out there don't recognize
you. I'm sure there will be. But also, I've just got in so deep so long.
I'm thinking
back to what I just said. I'm just like, does that even make sense?
To sum up, from what I can gather from all the podcasts I've listened to, you were born in Zimbabwe.
Correct.
By the year of one, your parents moved. Actually, your parents divorced, your mom moved you and your sister back to the UK. At the age of 4, you moved to France.
Mm-hmm.
You lived until the age of 14, then you moved back to the UK, North Yorkshire for 6 months.
Yes.
You did some schooling here, did enjoy, got a bit bullied by your classmate, being called a frog.
How did you know all this? When did we talk about this?
It was the other podcast.
There's no surprises out there.
And
everyone knows everything.
Those 6 months in the UK, you realized how French you were.
Uh-huh.
And then you moved back to France again, and this time to the age of 18.
Yeah.
And you moved back to the UK to do a degree in University of Sussex.
Yes.
And you live until this summer, then you moved back to Paris.
Yes.
Yes. And so that's why she was talking about...
In a nutshell.
Yes. That's why she was talking about this conflicting identity. Where do I belong? Who am I? Am I English? Am I British? Am I French? Or am I a bit of both? And you've been talking about accent is... If we're talking about linguistic on its own, it should be an objective remark. But for you, it's deeply personal and can be quite emotional.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good way to put it because there is like an academic linguistic. There's the idea of like, what is a language in terms of you learn it, you can speak it fluently, maybe you study it academically. And then there's your relationship to a language from like a personal level and what it means to you and how you learned it and how it ties into your sense of identity.
So what you said just now was exactly the same as you say on the France 24 interview. You say to the host that now you think you have a little bit of English accent when you speak French. Might I ask you, it's not until the age of 18. You mean like in the period now you live in the UK?
And I would say that it definitely happened after I turned 30. And
so,
who told you?
How did you find out?
I can hear it myself. And it's interesting because I do think there's something about languages, both in terms of learning them and keeping hold of a language, that really changes as you get older.
Yes.
We don't have the same dexterity for languages as you get older. So when I got into my 30s, I just remember thinking like, oh, I'm struggling to write as well in French. Bearing in mind that I went to a French school and I did a French baccalaureate. So when I went to university here at Sussex, I actually had to adapt completely because I'd been used to writing all my dissertations in French.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly had to go to writing them in English. So I was having to like rethink my phrases. The way the punctuation is in English phrases are much shorter. Like I had to learn how to write an academic English. And now, you know, when I got into my 30s, and that was like, what, 12 years later, I was realizing that I was struggling to sort of write long, complicated phrases. My French was diminishing. And I think language is a muscle. The older you get, if you don't practice it, I do think it will gradually go. So I do work at it. Like, I read French books. I mean, I live in Paris now, so it's easier, but I read French books. I listen to French radio. I really work on trying to maintain my level of French. And when I've spent an extended period in the UK, like even now, if I spend 10 days in London and I go back to Paris, my friends comment on it. When I was there the other day, my friend was like, I can tell you've been in London for 10 days.
It's a little bit of glitch period, right?
Yeah, just like...
The fine-tuning, getting back to another mode.
Oh, totally. When people say to me they speak 5 languages, I'm like, how? I find it so hard to keep on top of 2 languages and to be able to like manage them well and to speak them fluently. I don't feel like I have any more headspace to pick up another language. Like, I already find 2 languages so challenging.
Okay, can I be a pain to really nail and focus on this bit for 2 more sub-questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
First one, would you think that your accent is light enough only native speakers, when they pay quite a lot of attention, then someone can notice? Because I know you don't like to read the comments on your social media all the time, but some people do say, oh my God, Tati, I had no idea you were English until they go through multiple videos of yours. So for them, if they don't pay attention, it's not obvious. Also, when you went on the moon underwater, is that the moon underwater?
Yeah.
You did say you went to a wine tasting event and the French host didn't even realize you were British. So he just stopped bitching about we sell the low quality wine to British people, right?
It's really subtle.
It's really subtle.
It's really, 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 really subtle. On social media, it's even more subtle because I write a script for a video and then you repeat it multiple times just in the course of recording it, and I'll listen to it back and I'll be like, oh, I can hear the accent. Same if I do voiceover. So if I'm doing voiceover in French, I've got a text, I can record it, I can listen to it back. I'll know when there's been a little bit of an English accent that has come through.
Yeah.
Sometimes people think the accent, they can't really place it. They'll think maybe it's Breton or maybe it's from a different part of France.
Or maybe it's a French person who has lived abroad for a very long
time. Maybe it's a French person who lives abroad for a long time. Like, they wouldn't immediately be like, she's English, except that I think the hair and the look in general. No, but it's like I'm hearing like this big Scottish jumper. I've got a tartan dress on. It's giving...
We need to test it on the blind French person.
Yeah, it's giving UK energy. But no.
There was one really mean user on YouTube.
Oh, great.
And she's like, yeah, she looks Galois. I think that's Welsh. Is that right?
Yes.
Galois. So she looks Galois, but in a bad accent. I just find that comment. So it was a French video. You were talking French. You're introducing your town in Brittany, La Bourgogne.
Yeah.
And then she just commented on your feature or your hairstyle, your styling whatsoever. And the same thing, Catherine Bohar say that your haircut is quite French, you know, like, so when we identify, we try to place the identity of someone, there's visual clue, but also acoustically from the accent, you establish some other link. And for you, it can be some conflicting and contrasting.
Big time. Big time. I think it's very contrasting, but that's quite fun to play with. I think what's nice now is that when I was growing up in France, I really wanted to fit in.
Mm.
And so I would match what I was seeing around me in terms of look and vibe and whatever. And I wouldn't do anything that would be, I didn't want to become known as the English girl.
Yeah.
You know, I really wanted to shy away from that. And what I wanted was for all of that Englishness to be under the radar. I didn't want people to know that
but
I was English.
That's basically because during your teenage year, being called the English girl is a way of other people, maybe unintentionally, othered you.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
That's a way of you being pushed out to be the odd one out.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so when you get older, like now, when I'm in Paris, it's like I like the fact that I don't shy away from those elements that make me English and that make people, because when we're talking about the accent, right, can they tell I'm English? This is how much I'm sure that my look tells people that I'm not French, because when I go into shops in Paris, people speak to me in English before I've even spoken.
Oh.
So if I walk into a clothing shop in Paris and I'm looking at the rails, I've not said a word, and the salesperson who is French comes up to me and will say, do you need any help? Can I, that's what they say, can I help you? That's what they'll say. And then I'll reply, ben non, non, ça va, je regarde juste. And then they go, ah oui, okay. And then sometimes it even takes, like, they can't, because they'll look at me and they'll be like, she is not French.
There's a little bit double standard in my personal scenario. So to explain how I did the introduction in French, I did an exchange program in Sciences Po for a year. It was a long time ago. But I hated Paris so much. And Paris, the reason I came to the UK instead, I want to be in Europe. I tried France.
hated it.
Well, no, but that's good. Let's talk about that because I don't have a strong attachment to Paris. I mean, I do like it there.
Because you're from Brittany.
But I'm from Brittany. Yeah. So I'm not from Paris. I don't have that kind of blind defense mechanism of Paris. And I come from a part of France which doesn't like Paris anyway because, you know, it's
you come
a bit
on the
like,
part of France that's the Cornwall of
I
France.
I come in the Cornwall of France.
The second home where the capital citizens are purchasing en masse.
Well, yes, exactly. And that's why we hate them all. But no, but now I do really love Paris and I'm really warm to it. And that's taken a bit of time for me to warm up to it. But what was your experience of Paris then? Why did you find that so horrible?
I learned the expression very quickly, Parisien de tout chien. And at a school, the students from the Provence, which is all the regions outside Paris,
yeah,
they
absolutely.
All collectively hated them.
Me, la
but
Provence.
But the Parisians, like, of course you hate us because we're so much better
Who's
than
better
you.
Than you? 100%.
They were total snobs, but I wanted to explain one scenario. So if I visit Paris again, let's say I go into a boulangerie, a bakery. I started by speaking French. Obviously, I have a strong accent, a Chinese accent with a little bit of English influence maybe. And they would decide that your French is not good enough to deserve me speaking French with you. Mm. So they reply in English. But I would personally think, I think your English
is worse than my French.
You're not making the communication any easier.
But you know, that has happened to me even super recently where I was ordering something and the person spoke to me in English and I was talking back to them in French and they continued to speak to me in English and I was there thinking, I was really confused as to what was happening in that interaction because in my mind I'm going... But you 100% can understand my French because it is perfect. Even if there might be a hint of an accent, it's like a weird communication. And we're in France, but you're choosing to speak to me in English. And I did speak about it on socials because I do get offended by it.
Yeah,
I can't help it. I got a few messages from people and I think this is probably the best interpretation, the correct interpretation, that actually they are proud of the fact that they can speak English.
I think so.
And they want to use any... I mean, I'm not saying that's what happened to you in that boulangerie, but they want to use any opportunity to speak English and to practice their English.
Yes.
So they see me coming along and they see my face and they maybe hear the little bit of the accent and they go, she's English. Yeah, we can understand her, but guess what? I speak English. Let me show her that I can speak English. And it's really funny because they're not intending to hurt your feelings, but I'm like, oh, okay. Why are you speaking to me in English? Are you implying that?
That's a very plausible explanation. Maybe they also want to show off to people around them. Other French people around them say, my English fluency is much better than you guys.
Yeah, but then one thing they're definitely not doing, which I can say with certitude because I speak French well enough, they are not speaking to me in English because they don't understand what I'm saying in French. But for example, when that would happen to my mum, she would be like, oh, my French is so terrible that they can't understand me, that they're speaking to me in English. And actually, now I can say, no, they're not speaking to you in English because they don't understand your French. They're speaking to you in English because they've picked up on the fact that you're English.
And they want to speak.
And they want to speak to you, regardless of how good your French is.
You're like playing a language version of Who Blinks First, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think when we talk about without the malicious intention, I have this experience. So my friend, there was a mixed baby. Dual heritage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the baby was born in Germany. When the baby looks at people who look like me, the baby just speaks Mandarin.
Uh-huh.
Someone who's Caucasian, the baby speaks German.
Yeah.
It's a natural reaction.
Yes.
So I tried very hard to speak with the baby. It's not baby, it's like 3-4 year old by then. I kept trying to speak in German with the kid. And the kid just keep replying. In Mandarin.
In Mandarin.
Because for the baby, I'm just the kind of person in his little world that's supposed to be the Mandarin group. And for the baby, there's no concept of language, as you say.
Yeah.
They're just different ways of communication. Mm. And I deserve to be communicated in that language because that's most natural for the kid. And I don't think any judgment or intention is involved.
But it's interesting how you could continue doing that as you get older.
Yes.
Make that your habit. And then suddenly you find yourself in a situation where you're looking at someone who looks like they might speak Mandarin and you're immediately speaking to them in Mandarin when actually they are Germans who may have a heritage in China but are not particularly attached to it, and you're kind of assuming.
I've been burned so many times. If I see someone looks like my sort of race, I will assume they are either Australian or American first, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah, because I've been... and I think there's something to be said about being careful about that, because I know for myself, when I was living in the UK for a long time, if I met someone who had a little bit of a French accent, I would speak some in French. Now, I wouldn't do that because I didn't understand them in English. I would do that because I like to bond with people. If they're French, I'd be like, oh, vous êtes français? Vous êtes d'où en France? You know, and I try to build a rapport that way.
But now thinking back.
Now when I think back on it, I think, okay, so what you've done is someone French lives in the UK, speaking to you in English, and you've immediately spoken to them
in French. I can tell you have a French accent. That's what we implied.
I can tell you've got a French accent. Oh, I can tell you're not English. I'm much more careful of that now. You know, and the same thing can be said for people who are... friends I've got who come from Canada or from the States, who I might have once upon a time be like, oh, you're Canadian, or like, oh, I hear an accent, you must be like American. And then actually now I think about it, I'm increasingly more careful to be like, well, if that person has lived here for like 20 years, it must be quite exhausting.
It's like you before and after you accept that having a little bit English accent in your French is an objective remark. And you don't know whether the person is in your before stage or after stage, isn't it? And it's very difficult to tell unless you're in a person. So, oh my God, I'm so excited. This interview is everything I was hoping for.
No, and I find this so fascinating.
I'm going to move to the next stage, just beware of time. And, you know, originally I designed a structure, but I know it's completely useless with the conversation flow.
It's flowing because you've got so much to talk about.
I'm going to come to a concept that's been described on your personal website. Mm. I really love the term. I didn't know the actual term, but I always know the concept. You've been described as a third culture kid. Mm. For any listener who don't understand, a third culture kid is a child who's lived the majority of the childhood in a place that's different from the culture of the parents or the native country.
Yeah.
So in your case, that's why we say you're bilingual and bicultural, because your mom is also an interesting story. Your mom lived to this day, still doesn't really speak French. She is half Welsh, half Scottish.
Yeah.
But she comes across very English.
Yes. Yeah. Because she grew up in London.
And you, because of all those years you spent in France, you have French and you have English. I feel more appropriate to describe you as Franclais or Franklish.
Absolutely. But the reason why I actually use the term bicultural is because I don't technically have French nationality. When I started doing the stuff on social media, I was aware of that and I was quite careful of that. I've talked about it in my show because... I didn't want to sort of be a Hilaria Baldwin who was like, I'm Spanish. And then it turns out she's been on a holiday a couple of times to Malaga. And at what point, if you don't have the nationality of the country, can you take ownership over it? Like, at what point, how long do you have to live there? Like, what are the terms? Like, I lived in France for long enough that I could have got French nationality, but I never applied for it because I was like European. And we had this umbrella that was Europe. And then when Brexit happened, it was like, oh, I'm not European anymore. And I don't have French nationality.
But I do believe that we can separate what's cultural and what's political. Yeah. Legally, I'm a British citizen, but I would vomit if I just go to a random and say, hi, I'm British. Like, I know some immigrants.
But some people will. Some people will. And in the same way that I'm born. People ask me if I'm born in France. I'm like, well, no, I'm born in Zimbabwe. I'm not Zimbabwean. I would never be like, yeah, Zimbabwe is my place. It's my country.
You also say that biologically, you have more right to claim the Scottish heritage.
I do.
French, but you feel equal.
But I would never be like, exactly. Oh, I'm Scottish. Like, my name's Tatty MacLeod. Mm. It's like very Scottish name, but I would not claim Scottishness. So I think there is definitely like those objective rules about what makes you belong somewhere or be able to claim a country. But that is why I call myself bicultural.
And I like that. I love that you are a cultural nomad and you claim you have a fluid identity, and there's nothing wrong with that, except on multiple podcasts, people keep trying to pin you down to one side.
Yes. So are you more French or more English?
Yes. So on the Bouche à l'oreille podcast, they took three questions from the audience. All three of them was like, are you more English? Are you more French?
Yeah.
All three of them. When you went on the Sound Love podcast, one of the Scottish hosts just said that, what would you identify, more English or more French? People keep trying to ask you which one's more. And I just felt, why can't you accept that it's neither nor? Mm. And you gave a brilliant answer. You said, that depends. When I come back to France and the bloody shops are closed for 2 hours, for lunchtime, I feel English. But when I come back here, I'm not afraid to express my frustration, my anger, my passion. When I'm not afraid of being blunt, I feel French in an English city.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's beautiful. But I think for a lot of people, that's very difficult to accept.
I think sometimes people can feel quite, not even scared of it, but let's say belonging somewhere geographically and that being a big part of your identity is something which really is key for a lot of people. There are people from certain parts of certain places, like I am a Londoner, I'm a North Londoner, I am a Glaswegian, I'm a Liverpudlian. Like, it's not even something which is just where they live or where they were born or where they grew up. It's something which is intrinsic to who they are as a person.
It's the core of their fundamental belief and identity.
Like, who they are. And so I think that when you're coming to someone who has that sense of attachment to their geography and where they grew up, and you're kind of, oh yeah, I'm a bit of this, a bit of that, it's really fluid. It depends on how I'm feeling. It depends on that period of my life. It depends on what I'm up to. I think it doesn't make sense of like their view of the world. So I think that's where it comes from. It's people wanting to make sense of it. We have nationalities, we have borders, which we're increasingly getting really attached to. So the idea that you might be fluid within that, it's so not in the world. I mean, people have wars, like fight, kill people for borders. And then we're just being there. Yeah, but what does it all mean anyway?
I think this is both sides of the evolution of globalization, the movement of people, the movement of ideas, the movement of culture. More and more people start to get born in one place and then live in another place, marry someone from another place. But these are not 100% people. Lots of people still have a simple life, born in a city, live in the village, then work in a neighboring town. And it's not the nomad's intention to challenge their worldview. But when a nomad display, oh, we have a different way of life, those people already wary of how war has become different so fast, they feel attacked.
Yeah.
So they start to say, I disagree with your identity. I disagree with your way of life. I think that's in a way, in modern world, we see such lovely phenomena of Erasmus, for example, people moving across border. But at the same time, you see the populism, you see Brexit. It's actually two sides of the same coin.
It is, because one feeds into the other to some extent.
Yeah, both are products of this phenomena of globalization. But I want to lead to your audience, your followers.
Yeah.
Initially, for a lot of people, just thought like, oh, so Tati is the French TikTok lady.
Yeah.
And I refuse to introduce you like that, because for me, you are the nomad. You are the flu identity lady.
Well, I love
lady.
That you say that. And I actually think that is true. When I started doing stand-up after I'd done social media videos, so I did stand-up before, but then I did all this stuff on social media. And then afterwards, when it opened up again after the pandemic, I remember I had my first show. People came and then I was sort of like at the door saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for buying tickets as they were leaving. And I was really confused as to why so many people were not French and were not English. Mm-hmm. I was like, there were Germans, there were Spanish people, Italians, there were people from all over the world, Brazilian. And I was like, but what's your relationship to France? And then I realized, and increasingly this is what's come through from all my shows and from meeting people and from the messages I get, is that what it's about really is not about people who are necessarily French or English or even Francophiles or Anglophiles. It's about people who understand that feeling of being a fish out of water and being very much caught between two cultures. And whether that's because you've got parents in one country, one from another, you yourself are from somewhere, you live somewhere else, maybe your partner's from somewhere completely different, you're raising children between two languages. It's that challenge of being within one country and then also having this influence from somewhere else.
Yeah, I like to think that these are people, they are exposed to the possibility of moving around.
But this is also, you know, now there are more bilingual children in the world that, you know, children now, there's more bilingual children than monolingual children. So the idea that the world is monolingual or that it is monocultural is increasingly like, it's not a future vision of what the world is or what the world will be.
Yeah.
And I think we end up being quite attached to it or have it as our vision of the way things are, because in some countries like the UK, it's a very monolingual country. and some of the sort of stronger Western influences of very monolingual countries, but that does not reflect the rest of the world. The rest of the world is a bilingual, trilingual, multilingual kind of place.
The reason I bring this up is I was determined I must get tattoo on. This podcast may not have the same amount of followers you do, but the pattern of my follower of this podcast is very similar
I'm sure,
to you.
Absolutely.
It's people who come to me after the show and say, I listen to your podcast. I have a father from culture A, mother from culture B. I was born in country C.
So nice.
I don't feel like I relate to a place, but when I listen to your story, I feel, oh, I found my tribe.
I feel seen.
Yes. And when I left my country in my 20s and I came here to do, I came here to do a degree in European integration. So you can imagine the European kids who do the degree, they're like, oh, I'm Luxembourgeois, but my father is Danish, my mother is Greek. So you see this beautiful, tall, gorgeous person with a Greek Apollo feature, but a really blue eye. And when it was my turn, I just say, hi, I'm from Taiwan. My mom is Taiwanese and my father is Taiwanese. And I feel like I was the odd one out. But so many years later, I can completely understand them. Even though I wasn't born into a nomad family, I've made my own choice. I've uprooted myself and I made my life a migration. And I now can relate to these cultural differences. And what I really love, I really want to say this, and I hope it doesn't offend you. When you were on the French podcast, one remark from the French host really, really...
I'm trying to think of what French podcast that even was.
Bouche à oreille.
Oh, that was a long time ago. Yeah, that was a while ago that I did that. I don't remember doing that.
Bouche à l'oreille, published in October
2022.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what did they ask me?
So you've talked about when French people question your Frenchness, they are a little bit more subtle. They other you in the most subtle way, the English people calling you frog.
Yeah.
French people don't really call you roast beef. On that French podcast or radio, in the middle, she was saying, justement, comme tu fais de clips, de sketches sur réseaux sociaux, et comment tu cherches? And she was talking about the concept of guinea pigs. So she said guinea pigs first, and then she said, comment en français, un cobaye? So she said the English version, and then she said the proper French version. But before that, she said, like we say in French.
Comment dire en français?
Comment dire en français?
But that's not necessarily her saying...
You're not French. But
that's not her saying... Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but I do find it... I don't know. I discussed with a French friend. I said, before I ask the guest the question today, do you think... Am I overthinking it or is it just something French people would say? And he thought he would have used that more like conditional, serait, or en bon français. So I think maybe it wasn't her intention. But when she said, comment on, it's like we say in French, is guinea pigs.
Yes.
I think subtly, she doesn't think you are inferior, but she subtly make a little distinction. It's us, like nous, the français, the French, and you, the Anglo-French, the Franglais,
well,
I don't know.
I do think that it's interesting with France because France has a very different relationship to its language and to its culture than, say, the UK has. France is extremely protective of French, the French language. Yeah. They have an entire, like, French language police. And I understand why they're like that, because there are not that many countries in the world that speak French. And so in order for them to, like, keep French alive and to protect French and to not have it, as they see it, taken over by the threat
the
of, like, anglicization.
Defensive mechanism.
You know, it's like they really protect French language, French culture.
Yeah.
And also France has an immigration policy of assimilation, which means that when you move to France, we don't like communitarisme. Mm-hmm. We don't like people who keep, in a way, their culture with them.
Yeah.
Move to France. We don't want to have people within communities. You come to France, you become French.
Everyone is a citizen of the Republic.
Of the Republic.
The
you become
Republic,
France.
Yeah.
That's why it's laïque, it's secular. Mm-hmm. It's like you become French. And so within that framework, you have something, I suppose, that you could say is like this concept of, like, this is what it is to be France and everyone's welcome, but you have to become French. But I would say the negative of that it's not a framework that allows for a multiplicity of ethnicities.
Yes, and then in a way, there's also constant debate between the British model of integration and the French model of integration. And now then people say, maybe this one's better, then there's a riot in London and there's something else happening, the Gilets jaunes in France, and you never
Neither's perfect. And also what I would say in France is that one of the things that's complicated about that as well is that then you have to decide, well, what does it look like being French? Mm-hmm. What does it sound like? What does it mean to be French? So how do you become French? Who is the French example?
I read the reader's comment of your clip and they start debating, you don't want to, they start debating your Frenchness. It's as divisive a Brexit referendum for them. Some say that, no, she just as French, even more French than I am. Some say, no, I wouldn't agree. It's fascinating. It's talking about this conflicting idea of identity. I agree with you. I don't think there's one correct answer. Except, okay, I'm not going to bash that. So last time I mentioned the French podcast, when they were trying to describe what you do, she said that, well, you're trying to appeal to a group that is ultra niche. And then you say, hang on a second, I don't think that's ultra niche. And it comes back to what we're saying. You find pockets of these people, the cultural nomads, without internet, without technology, think they are in their solitude. They don't have their tribe. They do. It just need to be connected. And you managed to do that.
Yeah, I really think that the internet, generally speaking, has been amazing to connect with what people consider ultra niches. But this group of people who are global citizens, who are culturally homeless, third culture kids, people who understand what it means to code switch. You know, I'm sure that when you spend time with certain people, you're going to speak a certain language. Maybe there are certain customs. And then you spend time with different people, you adopt different customs. It's exactly the same. But what's interesting about that is that that can even happen on a micro level. So you take someone who is, let's say, a northerner. You know, I remember having a friend who was from Sheffield. He said, you know, I went to drama school. He said, and my parents were like quite posh and we had lived a bit not in Sheffield. I always felt like in Sheffield, I was considered the southerner and I was considered quite posh and I wasn't considered a northerner. Mm-hmm. And he said, and as soon as I moved to London, I was the northerner. And immediately I was considered working class and all of these kind of like prejudices and stereotypes about northerners. And so he, even though he is from the UK and English, he still had that feeling of like code switching, never quite feeling comfortable and never quite felt like he fitted in either place. So on a tiny level, I think it's something that people can relate to from all different parts of the world.
I agree. I personally think identity is relative. For example, most people just talk about you doing comparison between English and French. But on certain podcasts, the host differentiate whether they use the term English or British, right? Mm-hmm. And then you start to discuss that your name actually comes across very Scottish. You sound like the Scottish act who talks about potatoes.
Yeah.
So people come to your show with the wrong expectation. Whereas when you go to some French shows, you talk about your Breton identity, which is not something people in the UK would ask.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, and also maybe there's a little bit of influence from the French language. Sometimes you use the term English more than I'm used to, because I always find it's a bit awkward to distinguish when to say English and when to say British. Yes. The awkward fact is England is absolutely the dominant part of the United Kingdom. So it's more PC to say United Kingdom, it's more PC to say British. But in French, French people don't really care. They rarely say Le Royaume-Uni. They tend to say L'Angleterre. They say Les Anglais. That's why when you were doing your set in Scotland,
it didn't work.
You have to change your reference. And you say you went to do a show. There were tons of Glaswegian fans. Mm. You just thought, let me change the term English to British. So you're also Scottish people. Any British here, give me a cheer.
I mean, it's now a joke I've got in my show. But yeah, I say English.
Yeah.
Because British would encapsulate three things, which are not, so it would be Welsh, Scottish, and England. And those are not people that would sort of put themselves in the same group.
Yeah.
So it's like when you're talking about English culture, let's say, Scottish people are not going to recognise themselves in English culture. You're not going to have Welsh people they're not going to recognise themselves in this idea necessarily of British culture.
And that's true. And
they
also
have such
when you
a strong sense of their own, that Welsh people are Welsh.
Yes.
And in France, you haven't got the same thing. So there are certain regions of France, like, for example, Brittany, where you have certain people within Brittany who will be Breton first and French second. Mm-hmm. But by and large, in France, they're French first, and then there's some precision of like, but I'm from this département. Whereas in the UK, you are Scottish first and maybe British second. But that sense of I am Scottish, I am Welsh is going to be stronger than the British thing. So I'm very aware of that when I'm talking and making jokes, because being British isn't as clear for me as like being English.
The older I get, the more I learn, the more I realize that I know very little. And I think my conclusion is to have the grace to listen to someone else, because you may not know the subtlety of some other people's identities. So be willing to learn. Your pre-existing identity, your pre-existing idea of someone else's identity may not be fair, may not be exactly accurate. Sometimes what they say may not be exactly true, but at least have the patience to listen to someone else first.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jump over the identity bit. I'm going to ask you a very technical question. Your diction.
Yes.
Your English is so clear for a non-native English speaker. When you did the interview with the Belgian radio host, he kept praising how your English sounds BBC.
BBC.
And it's so neutral.
Old school BBC, let's say.
He kept saying it's accessible. Welcome everyone to come, even though they don't speak.
You try to
preempt. Well, you still need to know a little bit English before you come to my show, which is fully English. But how is your English diction so clear? Is it the drama school training?
You would call that, so it's received pronunciation, which is what is a technical
name. I know
name
a lot of people
it.
Who do are people not as clear as you are. Like, really, when I listen to you, you don't ignore or omit any consonant at the end. And a lot of native speakers do, especially in London. Yes.
Well, so I learned to speak English. My mum taught me to speak English. And I don't know how else to say that. What I mean by that is, because when we grew up in France, we were surrounded by French people. And I went to a French school and we didn't have many French friends, and there weren't actually any other English kids in my school. Yeah. It was just me and my sisters. So my mum taught me to read and write in English. I remember sitting with her and reading Roald Dahl. So she was the person that we were talking to. My mum grew up in London in the 60s. So I won't tell her how old my mum is, but she's born in the 50s. And so she grew up in London in the 60s. I think that it was very much, this was how people spoke in London at that time. So I learned to speak English through my mum. Like, when I moved to Sussex University, I had the English of a 50-year-old English woman.
Yeah, you have an accent of a time capsule, basically.
I had no slang. I had no youth language.
You don't say, what's up?
I had nothing. I remember turning up to university and people being like, oh, sick, bruv, that's bare nice. I was honestly like, what does that mean? I said, what do you mean sick? What's sick? What do you mean by sick? I didn't have any of the references, and people just thought I was incredibly posh. They were like, wow, she's so posh. She's never heard the word bear and sick before. Because I just, but it would be like you coming to France and not knowing what verlan is. Verlan is when you take French and you flip over the...
Oh, like instead of femme, you say meuf. Is that an example?
Voilà. And you say marum for like your mum, or rebeu for beurre. Like, there's lots of examples of it, but you wouldn't know that. And then you come to France and you'd be like, what? So that's the only way that I can explain the way I speak. And what I've been really careful to do, and I've been aware of it, is that when you go into comedy and stuff, it's easy to start dropping your consonants, because I've seen comedians do this to make themselves more likable on stage.
Yeah.
They'll have less...
They'll water down the accent.
And I've always been like, do you know what? That's not my truth. Like, this is the way that I speak, always have done. I'm not going to try and pretend to be someone that I'm not, to try and make me more likable. Like, I'm going to keep this and just hope that I can build a rapport with the audience, rather than try and adopt like a little bit of like a London sort of feel. Because I've seen acts do that and I'm just like, well, that's not...
Yeah.
That's not true. And you shouldn't really do that.
Because you say on stage, it's still you. It's just a different part of you. You want it to be an extension of you rather than an artificially created version.
I mean, not to say that character acts or people who are doing stand-up and doing abstract work or whatever, it doesn't have value 100%. Like, everyone has their own interpretation of the kind of comedy they want to do. But I personally like storytelling. I like hearing about people's lives. Mm-hmm. I get really disappointed when I hear a comedian say a great story and, oh my God, that was so interesting. And then they're like, oh yeah, that's not true. And I'm just like, oh, but I was so invested. I like to get to know you on stage. And I think it's always great when you see someone do stand up and you think no one else could do that bit because it's so intrinsically linked to who you are as an individual that it wouldn't work if it was in anyone else's mouth. I like that kind of comedy. So aspirationally, that's kind of what I'd like to try and write.
Like, I guess I really want to have, but I know I would never ask this question. Why do you feel you need to do a blaccent? I never understood.
What accent?
A blaccent.
What's that?
It's like a white guy talking a bit like Black British.
Okay.
Blackson. And I wasn't the only one who remarked on it. But I think it's too personal a question to ask. And yeah. I think accent tells so much story. And that's why.
But it's always about fitting in. It goes back to how can I feel like I fit in this space? Like for me growing up, it was adopting the perfect French and hiding the fact that I'm English so that I can fit in that environment. And I'm sure that there are people who do things even now in their work, in their office, in their job. Like how many people will go to a really posh university like Oxford or Cambridge and then before you know it, oh, they've lost any twang they had that was their regional accent because they feel like this peer pressure to become a version of themselves that they're not necessarily. But it's not to sound like super philosophical, but it is that really tricky thing of what is the authentic version of yourself? What does that even mean? And how can you be grounded enough within it that you can kind of...
And how can you be sure you're not doing it for this reason? Because maybe you are subconsciously doing that. It's very hard to explain
yourself. Yeah, totally.
I really love your sketch. I'm not just trying to be a fanboy. I like that... A lot of jokes are based on stereotypes, but the humor you draw in compare the English or British and French, and you did say that you try to ground them in some sort of reality of a real person. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely agree. There's a type of comedy based on French stereotype. It's just a French character act. And I think has gone so far. And even though I've only lived in France for 1 year, I did have a French boyfriend for over 7 years. A lot of the jokes you share, there was so much truth in it.
Aww.
And it's an exaggerated version. But yes. I agree, if people are willing to acknowledge the truth, a lot of stereotype, you know, it can be a bit comical. Mm. And there's a lot of truth in it. And I really adore your approach. I think you were thinking of a person you've noticed before, you've seen before, or you may know in your private life and trying to use that as your muse and to come to that sketch. And
Thank
that's
you.
Why they're so absolutely wonderful.
That's so kind. I do think about that a lot. And I think about it like in my show, I do a whole section about English women. And then at the end of it, I say, look, I'm acknowledging that this is a stereotype. Mm-hmm. There is a side of us which is like this, but what that side of us, this aspect of being an Englishwoman gives us, is this whole other thing of being an Englishwoman that's really wonderful. So I think it's okay to laugh at those or laugh at ourselves as long as we're kind of like acknowledging, just saying, I know this is exaggerated. I'm just putting it out there. But on the flip side of that, we have this, this, and this, and this. So it's all kind of balancing itself out.
I have 2 points relating to this. First, when I went to see the show, you're now doing the last one today.
Yes.
Literally today is the last one in the UK.
It's
the 46th, if I didn't count wrong, in the UK. And you're going to start your European tour in December 2024.
I should do some promo for that, actually.
And then 2025 in Luxembourg, Berlin, Hamburg, Amsterdam, and Brussels.
Yes. More than that, even. I'm doing Zurich. I'm doing Geneva. And Brussels, Paris, Luxembourg, Amsterdam, Berlin, Hamburg. I think that's everything.
Yeah. Initially, you were attracting those people looking for the tribe, those cultural nomads, those fluid identity kids. But I think this kind of joy is infectious. When I watched your show in Edinburgh, Monkey Barrel, this year, coming out, and there were 4, I think, English and Scottish, middle age, Gen X. One guy said, I don't know whose idea it was, but it was absolutely enjoyable night. And I could tell he wasn't your target audience.
Yes.
He doesn't particularly have a rich story of migration himself. But when he sat in a room, when the majority of them were people who exactly understood where you come from, you were making fun of people, said, oh, you could be a French guy. Are you a French guy? Yeah. Why did you move here? And he started to realize, oh, this side of a fluid identity is so fun. And that's why I'm saying it's infectious. You're a very capable comedian without doing that, but mm-hmm. it's extra joy when you see you perform in front of your curated audience.
Oh, thank you.
Because they get you the extra level.
Yeah.
And I watch you doing your comedy store set. You were very capable dealing with the drunk audiences who most come from a monolingual, moral, cultural background. So you have to deliver the joke slightly differently. Mm. And as a performer, I sometimes struggle. Sometimes I wish I could do more cosmopolitan, more multi-layer stuff, but I have to make my compromise when I realize that my audience is not exactly where I need them to be. So I would do a slightly different set.
Yes.
But you made me believe that if I work hard, those people are out there.
Yeah, oh my God, 100%. Yes. But that's your audience.
Yes.
And definitely I have a set that I will do that will be like a club set. Mm-hmm. And it's something that will work in a room that are not necessarily going to be people who have lived in multiple countries or who have that whole sensibility. And I have a set that works for that kind of room. And it will be on those themes, but it will be less nuanced or less specific. And then you have the version of the show, which is going to be something that is going to be for your audience. And those are the people who come and see you when you go on tour. Mm-hmm. And it is so nice when you find your audience.
Yeah. So you prove that it's not that it exists, it's also substantial.
Yes.
It's sizable.
Oh my God. Don't yes. you worry about that.
So I think a lot of listeners to this podcast are comedians who are international minded in all the different countries. They always wonder what compromise they need to make, what they should do.
Because I nearly didn't do it. You know, like back, I started doing stand-up in French and English. I did stand-up in French at a French comedy night in London. And it was all about being French and being English and what French people are like, blah, blah, blah. And then very quickly I stopped doing that because I remember thinking to myself, well, there's like one French comedy night on every 3 months. I can't build a career doing that. So I started doing English comedy in English that had nothing to do with being French to English people because I thought as much as the other stuff seemed to work, it was working to such a niche audience, I can't build a career from it. Mm-hmm. Then in the pandemic, obviously, everything changed. And then afterwards, I was kind of like, no, there is that audience there, and I found it through social media. But if it hadn't been for social media, I wouldn't have
pursued
that. And
even when it comes to social media, you didn't set out to do the cultural comparison.
I was doing loads of other stuff.
You say you 10 clip, you were making observation on corporate life, you're making observation on waitress, moms.
Even though I'm not a mum. And do you know what the trigger was? A woman commented and she just said under a video that I did about being a mum, whether or not you think this is correct, because maybe you'll say, well, it's not because you're not a mum that you're not allowed to, you know, laugh at mums. But she said, but I don't understand why you're making videos about being a mum. Are you even a mum? And I kind of took it and I listened and I heard it and I went, okay, maybe she has a point. And so then that's when I started doing jokes about the French and the English, because I thought, speak about yourself.
What have I got to say?
What have I got to say? Yeah. What's true to me? What can I speak with expertise on? That's where it stemmed from. And then it picked up and then gradually, you know, it's sort of gone to where it is now, which was never even on my radar. Mm. It was like unthinkable, you know?
Yeah. I think that's a beautiful end. I'm so glad to have you today.
Thank you for having me.
Je suis tellement ravi.
Merci.
De recevoir ta dit aujourd'hui.
Mais tu parles tellement bien français.
Oh, c'est mignon. Merci. T'es gentil. Okay, so how can people find you on social media? I mean, not a lot. Still not following you.
No,
but
come find me. So I'm Tatty, Tatty _ McLeod, MacLeod. And same, if you put the same into TikTok, you can find me on there. Those are the two platforms I'm really active on. I have a website, www.tattymacleod.com, if you want to find details about all the tickets for the various places that I'm going on tour. And that's really what I'm going to be up to next year. I'm going
she
to be doing
She doesn't really
tour.
Need this promotion. She has about like 517.
No. Because it's really... But
thousand
no,
followers.
But if they're... No, because the thing is, if you're listening to this podcast, you are my people.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, so...
You are my people. This is the kind of people I want coming to my gigs.
When this episode is up, we might just miss the dates in Paris in December, but Tati has quite a few dates lined up for the European tour
and there's
in
more
2025.
Dates in Paris. Yes. And there's more dates in Paris.
So please look up if you're in those European cities. Take your friends. It's a great gift. You're going to enjoy the cross-cultural experience so much. Trust me, I absolutely adore the show.
Thank you.
That's been our guest today, Tatty MacLeod. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Yay. Thank you so much.
Done.
What a joy.